You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy, coming all the way from that little box down the street. John, how are you?
I'm good.
Excellent.
I'm just sitting here in my box.
What was that weird look for, Devin? Come on.
Are you criticizing John's home?
No, I'm not criticizing.
Are you like, John lives in this little box?
Are we going there?
Is John homeless?
I am in this 2,300 square foot box.
Are we making this into some sort of social experiment where Alan is going to get thrashed right at the beginning?
Is that not what is the Jedi and Germs show?
The Jedi and Germs social experience, call it what you will. Oh, all right. We took a couple of weeks off, probably good because we needed time to clear the Netflix air from last episode.
It's funny you should bring that up, Alan.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. But anyway, I think we got a few things on the list of topics this week. John, where did you? I think you wanted to start with a little news that dropped just a couple of days ago, don't you?
The schedule.
Yes, the new NBA schedule for the 2017-2018 season. The Jazz. You had some points on that to talk about, didn't you?
Yeah, the schedule was not very kind to the Jazz. I saw that it was a real priority for the scheduling committee this year to work it out so that teams with the most all-stars would be motivated to actually play them when they have national games. So they were very accommodating to most of the teams with all-stars on their teams. And that meant the other teams kind of get hosed. And Jazz are one of the ones that kind of get hosed a little bit with this schedule. It looks like it's going to start out fairly normal, easy, for the first month or so. But then December and January, it gets really, really rough. It's pretty interesting. And Locke talked on his podcast about rest advantage. And he said that Jazz wound up coming out second worst in the whole league as far as rest advantage with when you play your home game. So, I don't know. It's going to be an uphill battle.
I hate this rest advantage. When are we going to go to a longer... I thought this was supposed to be the season where they start 2 weeks earlier. Is that not until next year?
I don't know. They're starting earlier. They're going to be... fewer four games in five nights, if there are any left at all, because they're starting on the 18th instead of like the 30th. So the Jazz opener is a home game Wednesday, October 18th. It'll be Paul Millsap and the Nuggets. And the Jazz's second game is going to be a road game in Minnesota, so Ricky Rubio can face his old team. And then it just, you know, goes from there. Jazz have more home games than road games for the first month or so, and there's some easy East teams in there. The home game against Brooklyn's coming November 11th, so we're getting them early. And some of our road games in November are nice. We have Brooklyn again, just like a week later, and then Magic and stuff like that. So they should be able to get off to a decent start, a little confidence-building start. And then once December rolls around...
So with as tough as the schedule is going to be, the Jazz will win 50 games, Quinn Snyder will win Coach of the Year, and the Boston Celtics will find some reason to implode, and everybody will be happy because Gordon Hayward walked. Really? Right? That's best case scenario. It's going to happen, right?
Yeah, that's best case scenario.
I'm wishful thinking here, I know. Go ahead, tell me. But come on, I'm giving best case scenario for fun. Come on. Yes, Devin.
I'm looking at the schedule, guys. You will not be saying happy holidays.
Yeah. No. Wicked five-game road trip heading up to Christmas or what?
Well, what it is, you've got this, I think it's a six-game road trip right before the holidays. There's a few home games after that before we get to Christmas, but you've got a back-to-back at Boston and at Cleveland. followed by going to the Rockets, stopping by Oklahoma City, coming home, playing the Spurs. And that's on a back-to-back. Oklahoma City and the Spurs on a back-to-back. Then you play the Thunder again a couple nights later. Christmas rolls around. On the 26th, you get a little bit of a break with Denver, who may be a pretty good team, let's be honest here. You know,
and that's on the road.
Right. But then that has a back-to-back with Golden State, and then you play Cleveland to end the year.
6-1. So yeah, I'm good with that schedule.
You get a best case scenario this whole episode?
Yeah, I'm totally going best case scenario. I know somebody just wants to call me out on this. Come on, guys, I'm kidding, but hey, I'm using my positive vibes here already. But that is a brutal schedule.
I mean, the Jazz will be lucky to walk out of that with two games. I mean, if you're realistic about this.
So it'll be the last Jedi that week before Christmas, and it'll be the last Jazz by the end of December. Okay. Yeah, I'm really failing at this, John. I'm sorry.
January is a bit of a turnaround, though, right, John? We get kind of a new beginning looking at it. I mean, you've got...
Yeah, January's fine. We got home with Pelicans.
You got the Hornets, the Pacers, the Kings, the Knicks. You've got some winnable games there.
Yeah, you do.
Hawks, Clippers, Pistons. I feel okay about.
Here's what I'm going to say: is as brutal as the schedule will be at times, and not kind to the Jazz, it all evens out. It all evens out. So you have that brutal stretch, but then you have a stretch in January where things will be okay, and maybe you find some even numbers again. So from a schedule on paper alone standpoint, you're right. This isn't going to be kind to the Jazz, but I'm not ready to. I'm
end
not
the season with the back to back.
Yeah, see, I'm not ready to jump off the ledge yet. So come on, listeners, do not jump off the proverbial ledge. That's not what we're suggesting here. It's just going to be. It's going to be a test. It's going to be a trial. The Jazz have an opportunity to prove themselves. Let's see where this season takes them.
Nope.
You're not telling people to jump off the ledge.
I am.
Why?
I am. No. I mean, you get to Christmas, you might as well trade Rudy Gobert and just start the rebuild completely over.
Oh, good heavens.
It's a done deal at that time, folks.
All right, fine. Wow.
The end of the season is going to be exciting. And I would say that starts with an ESPN game on March 28th where the Jazz will host Boston. Hayward will finally have his homecoming. In game 75-ish.
A game that probably won't matter much at that point, for Boston at least.
In March?
Not for Boston.
It'll still matter in March. They'll be battling Cleveland for first, maybe Toronto too, who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it'll matter. But then Jazz have home game against the Grizzlies, and Grizzlies look like a team that's going to fall out of the playoffs this year, but they're always still tough. And then road against Minnesota, home against Lakers, road against Clippers, road against Lakers. Home game with the Warriors is the second to last game. And then the last game on a back-to-back is an ESPN game where the Jazz are at Portland. Those last two games could be crucial. They might be hoping that the Warriors rest their stars that night, depending on where standings are. And then the final game against Portland, all indications right now is that Portland's going to be challenging Jazz for the eighth spot. When you look at, K-Pelt's power rankings and stuff, they project Utah to be like a 44 win team and Portland a 43, something like that. So I think the league had that in mind when they scheduled that as a final game. That could be a very crucial game.
44 games. See, no, I don't agree. 47, but that's just all right. Anyway. We'll get into that in a few weeks when we do our predictions for the season.
Wait, I was multitasking. Did you just say the Jazz will win 47 games?
I'm already picking that. Yeah, see, they won 51 last year. They lost, the player who shall not be named. But they still have the best defensive center in the league and probably will sport the best defense in the NBA. So that's worth something, right?
It is worth something. Let me think on it. We'll talk about this down the road. Hey, real quick, John, you mentioned Jordan Haywood coming back to
Jordan Haywood.
Yeah. Jordan Haywood guy. Do you think he actually plays, or do you think he avoids the confrontation and gets some rest, or has a family emergency, or, you know, accidentally rolls an ankle sometime in February?
Oh, I see what you're
Jordan
doing.
Haywood-Achek, he probably, it'll be late in the season. They might be resting him at that point if he's healthy. You know, who knows? I think he'll probably have that game circled.
I see what you're doing.
I think he'll play with all the motivation in the world.
And I'm going to call it, he's going to get a technical in the first half because Joe Ingles is going to frustrate him. See, I'm already
Joe
predicting.
Ingles will sneak in a wet willy just to see what happens.
I'm hoping he gives him like a wedgie or something. You know what I mean? Just like sets a screen. Gordon tries to go
up on his shorts.
Yeah.
Goes over the scores table, hands him a piece of toast with some Vegemite on it, and says, "Here you go, mate. Have a little Vegemite." Joe, I know you're listening. So I that was a horrible Australian accent. And shout out to our Australian listeners, because we do have some to listen. That was horrible of me.
We had some Australian listeners.
We still do.
And now they are leaving
because
Alan just offended the
I didn't offend anybody, because if anything, I'm rooting for our man Joe Ingles to just take it to Gordon, and that's what I want to happen. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, well, put another shrimp on the Bobby.
Oh, my gosh. Come on, Devin.
That was me being Alan.
No, that was not you being me. That was you being... I don't know what that was. All right, fine. We've really gotten off topic of the NBA schedule.
John, bring us back.
I did notice the Christmas Day schedule for the NBA. It's quite the lineup.
Oh, I haven't looked at that. Let me change my filters.
Yeah, I think there was 5 games or 6 games slated for that day. It was a big group, and Boston being one of them. I'm trying to think who they were matched up against. Trying to remember who was playing that day. Golden State was playing, but I know Boston was one of the teams that was set to play on Christmas Day.
Here's the Christmas Day schedule starting at 10 a.m. The Sixers versus the Knicks.
Oh, yay.
Oh, gosh, NBA.
Yeah, right.
How bad is the Eastern Conference? Just how awful is the Eastern Conference?
And yet you put them at 10 a.m. on Christmas Day.
Ashamed. Well, yeah. It's like someone in the East has to play.
Right.
Okay, so then the 1 o'clock game on ABC is the Cavs versus the Warriors. That's a solid one.
Yep.
After that, Wizards versus the Celtics. That's a pretty decent game. Then the Rockets versus the Thunder. Nice. Harden versus Westbrook. And then the late game is going to be the Timberwolves and the Lakers. Two lottery teams.
Wow.
Yeah, but you got some young talent on those teams.
Yeah, it'll be Lonzo Ball versus Carl Anthony Towns, so that they can market the players on that one.
Yeah, but that's your primetime game too. Yikes.
Well, that's TNT though.
Yeah, I know.
The middle three are all on ABC. I think they care about those a little more. Your late game is TNT, and that's Timberwolves Lakers, and that's fine. I mean, both teams will be better than they were last year,
right?
And there is all this buzz around Lonzo Ball, and Minnesota does have Karl Anthony Towns, and what am I talking about? They got Jimmy Butler. So
as long as on Christmas Day I can,
it's a home in Lakers. Yeah, that's.
As long as on Christmas Day we can watch Lonzo Ball and not have to hear one iota from his dad, I'm good. I can watch that game
you
and be okay with it.
Absolutely know that they're going to interview Lonzo Ball, LeVar Ball, during the game.
Yeah, and I wish they wouldn't.
I guarantee it. Every national, the Lakers have a ton of nationally televised games.
And it's
like fifth or sixth most.
And that TNT game, doing that, that's a game where I wish we had Sager doing the reporting for TNT, because that's an interview I might just get a kick out of anyway, because I love Craig Sager and to watch him interview LeVar Ball might be somewhat comical, and it will be made into the comic force that it really truly is. But whatever. And rest in peace, Craig Sager. Love Craig Sager. But man, they probably will interview him, and I don't want to hear any of him. I don't. So,
yeah.
Any other notes on schedule at all? I'm trying to think. I didn't see anything otherwise. Trying to think through.
No, I think we're good.
All right. So let's move on from Jazz notes from our NBA schedule. Move on to other NBA news.
Not much news around the NBA, but what I'm seeing over and over is Cavs are still considering trading Kyrie Irving, and they're just kind of waiting and seeing with LeBron, I guess. And then also I see talks have reemerged for Carmelo to possibly go to the Rockets. So that those are your two lingering stories around the NBA.
So here's an interesting thing. I'm glad you're bringing up Kyrie and Melo, because I was listening to, and I don't know why I get myself into this, because I really, this is one of those guys that I just don't enjoy listening to, much less reading, but was listening to the Ringer's podcast with Bill Simmons, right? It's his show, and was listening earlier on my way up, and he had a Kevin O'Connor from the Ringer on with him, and they were talking trade talks for Kyrie. And they were referencing a recent article by Adrian Wojnarowski. I don't know if you got a chance to see that on the Vertical, where they talked about potential destinations for Kyrie Irving. But they went through and discussed some of the things that Woj brought up. But here's an interesting three-team deal. And I was talking about this prior to us doing the show tonight, and Devin was shaking his head at me because of the fact that he said, you know, Melo wants to go to Houston and that's all that matters. Here's a trade. I want to hear what you think. The main pieces of this trade, the Knicks would trade Melo to the Cavs in a three-team deal that would include Denver. Kyrie goes to Denver, Melo to the Cavs, and Wilson Chandler and Shumpert. And there was one other player that I think was going to be reunited with his brother on the Knicks, and I forget the name already. That three-team deal would land those key players in those destinations, and it could involve a few picks, but it was interesting to hear Kevin O'Connor and Bill Simmons talk about how much they liked that potential trade. I mean, granted, it's just trade talk. It's not going to happen, but what do you think of a trade like that, John?
I didn't listen to it, so I'd have to,
I'd have to
see the details to really, how much does New York really get out of that?
Well, they get rid of Melo, which I think is their biggest thing they want to. And yeah. then they get reunited with Shumpert, and then they bring, and didn't Wilson Chandler run a series with New York for a bit before he ended up in Denver too? Or has he always been with Denver?
I can't remember.
I think he's always been with Denver, but Shumpert and Chandler end up in New York, which I guess isn't great. But the biggest thing out of that is the Knicks get rid of Melo. So then Melo goes to the Cavs, plays alongside his buddy LeBron, and then Kyrie ends up in Denver, and you have, check out this lineup, Kyrie, Millsap, and Jokic. Yes? If you're Denver, you have to do that, don't you?
I'm trying to picture it, and point guard is still one of their weaker spots. I know they have a lot of faith in Jamal Murray, but yeah, I think you have to. Who did they? Oh, they traded with the Jazz. I was trying to think if they got an awesome lottery pick, but no. So yeah, I think Denver would be a big winner in that. Cavs, not really, and New York. At least they got rid of picks, and they bring back two homeboys in Shumpert and Chandler.
Right.
Chandler did play at New York those first 3.5 years.
That's what I thought. So, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, both Kevin O'Connor and Bill Simmons really liked that deal a lot, and they were kind of drooling over it. But like I said, again, it's trade talk, not going to happen. But if you're Denver, heck yeah, you make that deal. I mean, that suddenly instantly makes Denver I think it makes them even better than they're already going to be this year. You know they're going to be pretty good, but wow, that makes them instantly a lot better. But they talked about a few scenarios. One included Boston, but Boston would have to give up more than I think they're able to. You know, Isaiah Thomas, they'd have to give him up. They might have to give up another couple of pieces in order to get Kyrie back. I just, first of all, I don't know that Melo ends up in Houston. Second of all, I don't know that the one thing that I think it was the vertical that mentioned is to give up, Kyrie Irving. I think that the Cavaliers would want to get a scenario where they don't bring back a lot of veteran talent, but it ends up being a lot of young talent that makes them good right now, but good long-term as well, just in case LeBron walks. I mean, if he sticks around, they trade Kyrie, they bring back two or three pieces that are good current young talent and they continue to win, but then they're preparing for the future should LeBron leave and they've got that young talent to continue with. I don't see a scenario where that really works in their favor at all in the NBA right now, but who knows?
I think what will ultimately happen, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if day one Kyrie is still on the Cavs.
Me too. There's
so many moving pieces that I don't know. It's hard to see a trade that the Cavs are going to come out better,
right?
Losing Kyrie, because what teams are going to give up for him? I mean, yes, he's an all-star. He's a stud. He has 2 years left on his deal. If you're trading for him, you want to get him, and you think that your team is going to be good enough with him that he'll want to stay. Now, one of the main reasons Kyrie wants to leave is he doesn't want to be in LeBron's shadow anymore. So Kyrie, I could see Kyrie going to a team like Denver and being cool with being the big fish in the little pond the way Westbrook is in Oklahoma City. So, you know, that would work for him. I think Denver would be one of the better places he could wind up. But are the Cavs really motivated to do that? I think the main thing they're worried about is LeBron really leaving in 1 year. They could just ride it out. They could just not trade Kyrie, let the chemistry be what it is, and then if LeBron leaves, then Kyrie wouldn't have a reason to want to leave Cleveland, because then LeBron would be gone and then he could be the number one guy on the team again and they could be a lottery team again, but hey, at least he's the number one guy.
Right. Devin, you got any additional thoughts?
I've been saying that Cleveland shouldn't trade Kyrie. I think I said that last time we recorded, did I not?
Yeah, you did.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they will. I think it may come back to bite them in the end, but I don't think they will.
What's the worst case scenario here?
That LeBron walks next summer and then Kyrie walks the next summer after that. And they're right back where they were when LeBron left the first time.
Right. And they don't have anything, right?
Right.
But, I mean, they did. They got a ring.
They did.
They got one for the land.
Right.
And what are you going to get back on a Kyrie deal? Would you rather take that chance and maybe get nothing back? Or would you? Here's the thing. Here's what I'm thinking. Okay. Let's say LeBron walks next year. Kyrie can be the guy, but if he's still disgruntled in Cleveland, you can trade him next year as well, and you can go full rebuild at that time.
Right.
You know, we've seen that happen with Melo when he was in Denver, because it was right at the end of his contract that he got moved to New York, was it not? I could be mistaken.
John?
I'm sorry, say that again?
When Denver traded Melo, was that the end of his contract?
Oh, that's a good question.
I thought it was, because it seems like
it was in his, I think he had one more year.
See, I thought it was at the end.
And so they really wanted to do something. Because it was a trade. If it was at the end, then he could have just walked.
Right. But Jazz made the move and kind of jumped it so that they didn't run into a Melo situation the next year with Darren Williams. But maybe there was a year versus 2 years. I don't recall. But you
okay,
can,
so they traded him in the middle of the 2011 season. So let me get to his salaries. Gosh, there's a lot of extra crap on their site now. I can't tell when he signed his contracts, but he let's see. So he had his rookie deal at 4 years. After that, he would have signed a 5-year deal. So he was in the middle of his fourth year, and there might have been a player option or something in that deal. Who knows? Let's just say he signed a full 5-year deal. Then he had a year and a half left. That's kind of an ideal time to trade someone.
Okay.
And I do remember the Darren Williams comparison. So they traded Darren Williams at the exact time that Carmelo Anthony was traded in his contract.
Okay. So either way, I mean, you could walk into next season and you could move Kyrie to get someone in the next draft.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You may have a team that wants to make that jump. So there's no point in forcing the issue right now. Because I think you can really probably get about the same out of it next year and have a better idea of what's going to happen with LeBron James. I don't force it. At the end of the day, Golden State has gotten better, I think, this offseason. And I think you're going to have a hard time beating them no matter what you do.
Which is truly just unfortunate and sick, but whatever.
I forgot how many pieces there were to the Melo deal. That was Denver and the Knicks, but you also had Minnesota involved.
I believe Wilson Chandler was in that trade. That's how he ended up in Denver.
Yes. Chandler, Ray Felton, Danilo Gallinari, Mozgov, Cash. 2 second-round picks, the 2014 first-round pick, which turned into Dario Saric, that was obviously traded to Philadelphia later, and a 2016 first-round pick, which wound up being Jamal Murray. That Jamal Murray was part of the Melo trade.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And there are so many pieces to that have turned out just bad for people. Let's see. Mozgov ended up on a big, huge contract that Cleveland had to dump to L.A., and then L.A. turns around and dumps it to...
Cleveland didn't dump
it. No, Cleveland.
That's right.
Was a free agent.
That's right. He was a free agent. He ended up in Cleveland, but then L.A. signed it. That's right. My bad. Yeah, so many pieces. Raymond Felton's jumped around since. And then you had... Oh, wow.
Kufis was like a throw-in when Minnesota got involved.
Yes.
Minnesota traded Kufis to Denver around that time. And
that's right.
Denver's where Kufis really found himself.
Man, you forget how many moves Kufis has made.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't he in Sacramento for a while?
He's in Sacramento now. He was in Memphis before that.
Oh, that's right. He is still there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he started in Utah, and then he just couldn't quite put it together. We threw him in with, he's part of the Al Jefferson trade, didn't we? Yeah, I think we threw him in the trade when we got Al Jefferson. And so he was only in Minnesota for the rest of that season. And then he was thrown into this trade to Denver. He was in Denver for 3 years. He was in Memphis for 2 years. Now he's been in Sacramento for 2 years.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on from that subject. One last thing I wanted to throw in NBA news and notes. I don't know if you guys caught today, and I may spend a little time on this later. Not on this show, but later in a piece, perhaps. But Tommy Beer, at Tommy Beer on Twitter, basketballinsiders.com, tweeted out some footage earlier, and I retweeted it. I don't know if you two saw this, but there was some pickup basketball in New York City earlier today. LeBron, Kevin Durant, Melo, additional players, J.R. Smith, Lance Thomas, Marshall Plumlee, and Enes Kanter. All playing a little pickup basketball in New York today. Video footage shared on Twitter. And again, that's at Tommy Beer. I shared it. Interesting offseason. Bunch of the guys getting together and playing a little b-ball in New York City.
Cool.
So.
No, I didn't see that. But that's cool.
Yeah, I shared a couple of those videos from Tommy Beer, but if you want to check out, he shared three or four of them. You wanted to see one of them was he puts in hoodie Melo because Melo's playing with a hoodie on, and he goes drives past LeBron and for the layup, but shows all of them. You see Enes Kanter in the background doing his usual non-existent defensive stance. So still fun to watch. A little pickup basketball. So for those who did not catch that, at Tommy Beer. TOMMYBEER. Worth a look. So some of the guys playing in New York City. Any other NBA news and notes?
I don't have any.
Okay, you have any more?
No. Oh, right. Bless you,
yeah,
sir.
Whoa, yeah, wow. Wow, thanks. All right. Okay. Wait, I do have one last thing. I read this to Devin before we started the show. Richard Jefferson on his podcast. You guys know the name of Richard Jefferson's podcast, right? It's the... I'm trying to look up the name right now. Sorry.
It's the Richard Jefferson show.
No, it's the Road Trippin' podcast that he does with Channing Frye. You ever heard that show?
I've heard of that. I haven't listened to it yet.
So this was reported by Daniel Rappaport on SI about an hour and a half ago. Richard Jefferson on his show had Dave McMenamin from ESPN on, mm-hmm. and they were talking about Darren Williams' playoff disappearance for the Cavaliers. And this was on the show. Apparently, I need to go back and listen to this episode. But Dave McMenamin says, "What about when you talk to?" Oh no, wait. Says Richard Jefferson says, "When you ask Darren about golf, his eyes light up. When you ask Darren about MMA, his eyes light up." When you ask, or Dave McKenneman says, "What about when you talk to him about coming off the bench for the Cavaliers?" Jefferson responds, "His eyes did not light up. His eyes did not light up." And then Chris Geeter from the show says, "What about when the Warriors saw him coming off the bench?" Jefferson, with a bunch of laughs to come, says, "Their eyes lit up." So they have.
I'm downloading that episode. I'm going to listen to that.
Yeah. So the last paragraph of the SI article says Jefferson laughed before he gave that final answer, and it didn't sound mean spirited at all. Yet all humor is rooted in truth, and the truth here is Williams had no business being on the court in that series. Jefferson and his Cavs teammates know that now, and it appears they knew it then. So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
So if anybody wants to check out, and from what I understand, I've only heard tidbits of it, but the Road Tripping podcast with Richard Jefferson seems to be a hot ticket around the NBA, so check it out. All right. Let's move on to, what we got, Devin's quick hits up next.
Oh, were there any listener questions?
Oh, wait. Yep, I'm skipping listener questions. I had two questions. John, I don't know if you got any others, but let me see if I can find them. Good friend Ute Gorilla asked us to talk about Clintonite 33s, you know, Clint Peterson's feelings about Gordon Hayward. John, you and I were there at the jersey burning ceremony. What's Clint's feelings on Gordon Hayward? I think we know the answer to this question.
Your lead in just clarified.
Yeah. my lead in with the jersey burning to the question. Yeah, pretty much.
So man crush, right?
Yeah. Total man crush. Okay. anyway, that ignited quite the, tweet stream going on. Clint had a little bit of fun with that one, but, and then really let's go here real quick. Tyler Kinney, one of our regular listeners, asked us to talk about our favorite jazz memories. So I'm going to ask you first, John, what is your favorite jazz memory?
Well, there's some from TV that I get warm fuzzies for. I mean, number one, I was watching TV live when John Stockton hit the shot. I was watching TV live when Sundiata Games hit that miracle shot to win the game. I actually watched that again the other day, just get warm fuzzies all over. My favorite jazz memory that I saw live was the playoffs when Derek Fisher was flying back in, and Jerry Sloan left a spot open for him, and he came in the third quarter, and he got a hero's welcome, and he came in, and he made this really cool defensive play at the end of the game and helped the Jazz win that game and ultimately helped them beat the Warriors and advance to the Western Conference Finals. So despite everything that he did after that, Derek Fisher showing up for that is my favorite Jazz memory that I saw in person.
I'm not going to lie.
That's cool.
That's a great, that was a great moment.
Wow.
I'm sorry. All right. I got something stuck in my throat. I get emotional thinking about that game.
All right, Devin, what about your favorite Jazz moment?
I think mine probably the same as everyone else. The shot, Stockton shot, you know, that was quite a moment. I loved the Gaines buzzer beater. I also loved the Gordon buzzer beater against Cleveland that he hit. You know, if we're going more recent. Game-wise, I think my favorite game that I've been to, and I've had the privilege of going to a lot of them lately, compliments of you, Alan, you know, being a season ticket holder. You've had my back on a lot of these. But I think my favorite game has to be sitting lower bowl to watch them play LeBron James and the Cavs. I think it was last year.
Oh, by the way, kudos to you, because I think that was your game that you got us to. I don't think.
Well, you weren't at that one.
No, I was at that one, but I was, but I may not have been with you, but I was at that game.
I was there with Sean.
That's right. I was at that game too, but I was there with somebody else.
It was one of those games where they just blew them out.
Yeah, they did.
On national TV. And to sit there and witness this was last year, so they were the championship team.
Right.
To see them without a lot of guys, if I recall correctly, it was a big, like, Joe Ingles game, I think, that one. I think Rodney had a good game.
Yep.
I believe they were up by, like, 20 points.
I believe Hayward didn't play in that game either.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was really cool to be in that atmosphere. And at the same time, for me, as a huge LeBron James fan, I'm not sure if you guys knew that. That may be shocking.
Really?
Breaking news.
Really? Wow.
I really like LeBron James.
Breaking news right here on Jedi and Germs. Devin likes LeBron James.
But I've always viewed LeBron James and said, you know what? I don't remember seeing Jordan play. I probably didn't see him play in person. I remember watching him on TV, of course. But I didn't want to miss out on seeing LeBron in his prime.
And
being able to see him from the lower bowl and still have my team win, you know, you get a witness just how amazing LeBron is in person. I loved that. It was kind of a win-win for me. So,
okay. That's a great moment. As far as for me, I have seen a lot of good moments. I'm going to go back to what Devin started his moments off with. My favorite Jazz moment, and this isn't even one I was live for, was the shot. I remember being in my basement watching the game. He hits the shot, sends the Jazz to the finals, and I immediately flip in a classic song, Chicago, just singing it, going crazy. And the next thing you know, 3:30 in the morning, I'm at the airport welcoming the winning club back on the tarmac. And that was a pretty incredible night. And I do believe it was 3:30 in the morning that I was there with some 8,000 to 10,000 other Jazz fans. Were just packing that tarmac to welcome home the team that had just beat the Rockets and were going to Chicago for the finals. So that was my favorite Jazz moment. But I've seen quite a few others. You know, you talked about seeing LeBron. I was at game 6, 1998, got a chance to watch Jordan. In fact, I'd seen Jordan game 1 of that series as well. And watching the Jazz sweep the Lakers the previous series, being at game 4 when they, or game 1, can't remember what game that was, that series, watching them just blow out the Lakers. That was probably my favorite playoff experience yet, was that 98 season. So yeah, Tyler, great question. I mean, we could talk about favorite Jazz moments all night, and I don't think we could go wrong with any of them.
You know what we should do?
What's that?
We should talk about, like, favorite Jazz players sometime. I don't know that we've done that. Because everyone's going to say Stockton, Malone, you know. But I'd like to get into maybe one day we talk about the role players.
Yeah.
You know, those guys that maybe some people have forgotten about.
Right.
We should do that.
We should.
Because we're going to have time over the next few weeks. So,
what do you think, John?
That's a good one to think about and do next time.
Okay, let's plan it next time then. All right, moving on to Devin's quick hits.
Okay, I don't have a lot this week. I know that we're not really baseball people, but Bryce Harper of the Washington Nationals went down with a knee injury after slipping on first base bag while it was wet, inclement weather. Hurts his knee, goes down, ends up being a bone bruise. He's going to be out for a decent period of time, it sounds like. His agent, Scott Boras, said, in the NBA, when a player hits the floor and there's perspiration on the floor, they clean it up immediately so the surface isn't slick. We don't do that. You guys ever thought about that with baseball? I mean, this is something that had never crossed my mind.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, but...
I would say very few people probably have. I don't know. Maybe avid baseball fans have, but no, that's never occurred to me. But now that this has happened, maybe they can send umps out there with washcloths or something, I guess. Make sure the bases are dry.
Yeah. Here's my thing on baseball. You're playing it. It's outdoors. Next thing you're going to know, you're going to tell me that in a football game that you're going to, you know, go out there with fans and dry off the field after a rainy day before you send the football players out in cleats. I mean, I get where the agent's coming from, but it's a world of difference between that and the NBA. The NBA is an indoor sport.
Well, here's where I'm going to differ from you a little bit, Alan. In my mind, yes, you do have cleats in baseball, but the difference is with football, it is all either on a natural surface or an even artificial surface. Everything is the same. You don't have an elevated object that you're stepping on. You know what I mean? And so you're not going to dry off the baseball field. You're not going to deal with this in soccer anywhere. But the fact that there is a raised surface made of a synthetic material that you're stepping on, to me, that why not?
Yeah, I guess.
And how often are you going to have to deal with this? I mean, you know.
Well, how often has this happened in MLB history? Maybe you can answer that. I mean, is this the first we've seen of it?
I'm sure it's happened before, but this is probably the first time or one of the very early times for a guy who's an MVP candidate, a multi-time All-Star. You know, he is arguably the biggest name in baseball right now.
What if you created a heated home plate, heated pad that kind of self-dries when it gets wet? Just throwing that out there. John, what do you think?
I think they could consider it. I don't know.
Just a thought.
I mean, that wouldn't do that much. So you'd want hot water.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you want him to burn himself?
All right, my bad. Gosh, I'm throwing out an idea.
What if we turn it into a
diving
hot plate?
Hands first?
All right, next quit.
And you could put a candle on it.
All right, smart. I could use
one of the bases has a bomb, but we won't tell you which one.
All right, you smart A's. Okay. Moving on to your next quick hit.
I'm watching
that makes baseball a lot more fun.
Let's see. Some soccer guy got suspended, received a red card for shoving the ref. It was Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't know. Do you guys care? You don't care.
No.
John doesn't care either, I don't think.
No, not really.
You guys ready for fantasy?
I'm getting there. I'm in one league that we're going to start our draft in 2.5 weeks.
This might be the first.
I might be joining a second league.
This might be the first year in a few years that I don't play. I don't know. I just don't have the time. But sure, bring it on.
Okay. Tip from what I saw online, Hold out on getting a quarterback. Don't jump on it right away. You'll want to, you know, start out with a running back, wide receivers, get those players scoring the touchdowns. But anyway, if you were playing, what would be your thoughts on drafting Ezekiel Elliott? Because that guy is suspended for 6 games.
He was great for me last year, but I don't know. Yeah, I would say that if you're having a surprisingly good early draft, then maybe you can go ahead and take him and just stash him. But I wouldn't take him.
Word is he's appealing his suspension.
6 games. That's, I mean, they're guys who've managed to do well when, you know, Gronk's injured, and so they draft him, and then he comes back midway through the season, and he's instantly a stud. I've seen that happen before, but
yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Do you take him and then you have him for the playoffs? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, again, yeah, and does he last the full 6 games, or does an appeal get him less? I don't know.
So let's see here. Just kind of browsing, seeing what's on the interwebs. I have one, but I want to finish with it. So let's see. Okay, we're gonna touch on the. Are we gonna record next week? We may not.
We may not.
We may not. I mean, it's possible.
Okay.
So let's talk about it now, and maybe we'll talk about it more next week, because I'm sure you'll get more buzz.
Okay.
Okay.
Alan, you don't care. John, there's a fight happening.
Yes, there is.
There will be some punching of each other. There will be sweat.
Wait, I have
maybe some blood.
I have a take on this. Wait. I don't care.
Okay. I told you didn't care.
I know. You didn't give me a chance to say that, so I'm saying it myself.
No, I told you, though.
Yeah, well, you don't need to tell anyway. Go on.
I'm telling you how you feel.
Just move on. Continue.
John. Let's talk about this. What does it take for the Notorious to win?
Changing the rules to MMA.
That's it? That's all we have to do?
No, I think Floyd's going to win. I think Floyd's going to dance around a bit just to give the people a good show. But them are the rules, and I think he'll win the way he wins most fight. Wear the guy down by dodging everything he throws at him and then moving in for the kill.
Okay, here's my thought. I am leaning towards Floyd Mayweather. Towards Floyd Mayweather winning this match.
You're speaking in terms I can agree with. That's about as bad as this whole topic is.
I think he'll win, and I called it a match, and whoever that guy was that told me it's a fight, not a match, please feel free to, like, fight me on Twitter again. But here's the thing. Here is how Conor McGregor can win. He has to go in when he has fresh legs, fresh arms, and he has to just go nuts in that first round, because he is not going to win a finesse boxing match against Floyd Mayweather. It is just not going to happen. So he has to be willing to go in there and say, you know what, I'm an MMA fighter. I'm used to getting kicked in the face, punched in the face, choked out. I can dish out anything that he wants to hit me with. And maybe he can, or maybe he can't. But he has to take that risk and just go at him. Because the only way I see him winning is if he lands a punch. Are you yawning? Is that an audible yawn on our podcast? That's my take.
I see a lot of Floyd getting in the corner early. You know, Conor just throwing whatever he can, and Floyd getting in the corner, and the ref backing him up, and then going back in the corner, the ref backing him up.
Yeah, I expect that'll happen, but you have to hope, if you're Conor, that you can land a shot.
The ref, go to your corner and think about what you've done. Do it now.
Yes, sir.
Is that your last quick hit?
No.
I got one more. Look at you.
This may not make some people happy, and I am sorry, but I'm going to do it. Because I feel it needs to be done. we've talked a lot in the past about Colin Kaepernick. We've talked about the protests. We've talked about the role of professional athletes in social issues, in silent protests, or in communicating their opinions and beliefs. But we had an incident this past weekend, and I don't think we need to get into the specifics about it, because I think we all agree that what happened is a tragedy at minimum of what we're going to say of it.
Yes.
And really something that has no place in America or really anywhere in the world. But what I want to talk about is what this does and how this impacts, as we've discussed previously, what does this do to professional sports? Because I feel like this is going to be, in my mind, something that is going to push Kaepernick's message and a lot of athletes' messages more to the forefront, where they are in that position to actively speak out. And I just wanted your guys' take. What do you see happening with this upcoming NBA, NFL season, dealing with the tragedy so close to where we get ready to begin?
John?
Well, let's talk about Utah. I went to two rallies. One was at 5:30 at the Capitol. Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox was among the speakers. And then an hour and a half later, there was another one at the City County building. And one of the speakers was Jabari Parker. And, you know, it was a great gathering. There were hundreds of people there. There was reports that there was supposed to be an alt-right rally across the street from it. And I went there, and people can look at my Facebook wall. I recorded what was going on. There was like three guys who showed up, and they were chased away by Antifa, so it wound up being nothing. I think the events of Charlottesville have awakened a lot of people to the strife that's going on under the surface. And I'll say this, Nazis are good for ratings and attention. They're going to get attention. They're going to get all the cameras in the world. And responsible people will respond to that. They will counter that. They will say, your views are not welcome here. Sure, they can get a permit and protest and chant and whatever. But, you know, what happened in Charlottesville, they showed up with weapons. They showed up with shields. They showed up dressed like paramilitary. And, you know, there were some counter protesters who also showed up with clubs and whatnot. But it was the Nazi who actually killed somebody. You know, this is a serious business, and you saw a lot of unity. I will say this, you saw a lot of unity come out of that. You saw most people, like all sane people, came out and strongly condemned it quickly and instantly. And maybe some were slow, but it was pretty obvious that we cannot let America devolve to this state. And I've seen reports before these incidents that there were other players who were planning on sitting down during national anthem for the upcoming NFL games. I saw Marshawn Lynch was one of them. He's announced he's going to sit during the national anthem for all the Raiders games. I think that's going to be more tolerated this year than it was last year. Kaepernick got a lot of heat for it last year, and One of the things I believe I said early on was, if only he was a better player, or if only a better player was the one who had started this. I think that's going to matter less this year. I think more players are going to do it, and I think it's going to be more accepted this year that they do it. That's my take.
Well, I'm going to offer my take here, and that is, hate is unacceptable. It's not good. I don't agree with any of those organizations that promote that hate at all. You know, Nazis, doesn't matter. Just don't promote hate. It's not, there's no place for it. Not in this world, not in this country, not in our lives. I'll reiterate again, I had no problem with what Kaepernick did. Would it be something that I would do? No. Did I have a problem with it? No. You know, I have a problem with extreme organizations, period. Alt-right, alt-left, doesn't matter. We need to find middle ground. We need to get rid of hate. We need to work together. You know, I can't express that enough in my thoughts, is that the hate affects people, and it affects more than just the victims, more than just the people that are present. It affects people that aren't present, people that see the news, people that read the papers, people that might be family, people that are friends. It affects a lot of people. Hate does. And it needs, again, it has no place in society. So I condemn it as much has already been said on this show, and as much as I possibly can. It just needs to stop. I'm right there with you, John. Did we answer that question good, Devin? That's a tough question to tackle, but
yeah, no. I just wanted your guys' take, kind of like I said, what can we expect to come out of this in the sports world? You know, with John and myself, I know that we could easily turn this into a political podcast every week, which might be kind of fun.
Yeah, no, please, because I'm not very good on that realm, and I will not get into that. I will gladly express my feelings of disdain for hate tonight, but I am not a political idealist in any way, so I will not last.
But this that's the thing here. What we're talking about, we're talking about political protest, if you will, and kind of situations, but really the issue that took place, I don't consider it politics. You know,
no, I don't.
That protest, if you will, that rally, if you will, whatever you want to call it, that gathering of people, that was not politics. That was hate. You know, that's all it was. So we're not going to turn this into something. We know you guys come to us to listen to something about the Jazz or about our takes on football, or you want to listen to me make fun of Allen. And I enjoy doing that, so we're going to get back to doing
that.
And I'm
going to say this, too. A couple of years ago, we were talking on this subject when the things with Kaepernick and other stuff started happening, and we talked about how sports was an escape for all of us. Right, John? I mean, I remember you specifically saying that. We all talked about that. We want it to be that way with us as well. It's unfortunately it's bleeding into sports. It's bleeding into entertainment. It's bleeding into every aspect of our lives. So it's at the forefront and it's going to be there. So we have to address it. But folks, let's put hate aside. Let's not have it. Let's go on and enjoy life and enjoy sports and enjoy it for what it truly is, as entertainment and fun. And let's have some fun. And yeah, if you want to make fun of me every week, I'm okay with that, because hey, it's fun. It's fun conversation.
I'm glad you are, because I'm not going to stop either way.
I know you won't. All right.
I have a microphone and I will use it.
All right. Let's move on to our final topic of the night, or final segment, pop culture. John, you saw a movie.
I did. I saw Annabelle Creation. It was the number one movie over the weekend. It was the fourth movie in the Conjuring universe. We've had Conjuring 1 and 2. And then we had the movie Annabelle, which is a spinoff based on the doll. I saw the first Annabelle movie. I hated it. I thought it was terrible. But reviews were good for the sequel. And, yeah, it's pretty good. I think the main reason it works is because David Sandberg took over directing duties. He directed Lights Out, which was a decent little thriller from last summer. This one, it has a lot of horror cliches in it. You know, like when one character gets isolated, all of a sudden all the other characters can't hear them as they're screaming for their life, stuff like that. But I thought it was pretty decent. It's not must see. It's really kind of a barely thumbs up for me, but it was so much better than the first Annabelle that I appreciated that alone. I thought it was fine. It's a decent enough horror movie for what they're trying to do. You know, it has some good scares in there, and overall, I would say I liked it. I give it a mildly pleased.
All right. I can't say that I've seen any movies to talk about. I know one thing you talked about on Twitter Last week, I think you and our friend Brooke were going back and forth about this, and she's been strong on this. I started, because of the two of you, I started it. I haven't gotten very far. Ozark.
Yes.
You want to talk about Ozark for a minute?
I couldn't remember if I talked about it last time. Yeah, I ate right through that series. I really enjoyed it. At first it felt like a movie that was trying to just outdo Breaking Bad, but after a while I kind of realized what it was going for, and I really enjoyed it. It's kind of a cross between Breaking Bad and Justified, where it takes this guy, Jason Bateman, and you find out in episode one that he's a money launderer for the second biggest drug cartel in South America, and his life is in danger, and so in order to spare his life and his family's life, he makes a deal with the cartel guy that he will relocate from Chicago to the Ozarks in Missouri, and he will start money laundering down there. And so the series is just him trying to stay alive and trying to figure out how he's going to launder $8 million by whatever the due date was that the cartel gave him. And every episode, it feels like someone new is threatening to kill his family and kill him. And it's just constantly tense. But after a while, I realized it's constantly tense in almost a trashy way, but it's using the tropes of what some people call prestige television, when you have like these classic shows that HBO and Netflix are doing that tend to get nominated for all the Emmys and stuff, or AMC. This takes that, but it goes so over the top with coincidences that I just couldn't help be entertained by it. And so overall, I would say it was fascinating. The tension is there. It feels like it could be the last season of a 5-season show, where you're heading towards the climax, and every episode it just gets more and more over the top. And yeah, by the time I got to that season finale, I was excited for season two.
So, you know, and you may have talked about it last week. I don't know how in depth we got into it. I was looking at show notes from last week and I don't remember if we really got into it, but you know, you mentioned that he was a money launderer. What I'm watching the first episode again, I'm only one episode in, but he was an accidental money launderer, if you will. And I don't know if accidental is the word. He didn't even know he was.
No, he knew they were laundering money. He didn't know his partner was screwing him over.
Okay, maybe that's what it was.
He didn't know his partner was skimming.
That's right.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where it was. But that story alone was okay for me, but it wasn't until the cartel showed up, guy shoots everybody and then almost kills him and then says, all right, let's work a deal. And then his wife, you know, he catches her. Dude, that whole scenario is when I started getting interested. And you mentioned the word trashy, and there's some aspects of this where it's just like, man, it's just trashy. But it drew me in. I'm like, man, I may not get into this. And one episode in, halfway through the episode, I'm like, no, let me turn it off. And I didn't. And now I want to go back and finish the series because, like you, I'm intrigued. It had enough to draw me in. Jason Bateman, I thought, was really good so far. I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. It was just a weird experience watching the first episode, but it was enough to get my attention. So.
Yeah, I liked it. I would say make it all the way through the first episode, and then you'll know if you want to watch episode two. And after you watch episode two, you'll just keep going.
Yeah, and I need to pick up episode two. But yeah, you said it perfectly. Watch it all the way through the first episode. If you feel like you're going to quit halfway through, like I did, don't give up. Keep going because it does start out slow. It does start out slow. So. Other than that, and thanks to a couple of people with feedback on that from our Netflix episode last time anyway, because that's one of the shows that was suggested, and I'm glad I got into it. Beyond that, I don't think we have anything else. Devin, you don't have anything else? No?
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure I watched a movie, but I don't remember what it was. You know? Oh, I rewatched... Tom Hanks movie.
There's a lot of
where
them.
He, where he goes back to school. He loses his job, goes back to school, yada, yada. I got like 30 minutes into
yeah.
it. I'm like, I've seen Larry this before. Crown. Yeah, yeah, Larry Crown.
Okay.
So I watched it again. It's all right.
Okay.
It's all right. It's on Netflix. Other than that, I have been watching this great new series called CNN. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of it. It's really good. Really good. A lot of drama, interweaving storylines. I've been watching the news.
You're okay. Because I was going to say, you're really going places with this, and I'm not following you.
Ooh, I did start watching something. Have either of you been watched those documentaries that CNN does about like the 80s, or they're doing the ones now for the 90s?
No.
They're actually kind of interesting. They cover different topics, so I watched one of them. It was on the Clinton administration and their time, which is really cool for me. I'm guessing some of our listeners are my age, younger, you know, a little bit older, but I don't remember the 90s all that well. I remember the things that I liked in the 90s, you know.
You didn't miss much.
Never mind. Don't waste your time.
I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
But it is cool to go back and to have that perspective as someone and now kind of understanding it and seeing people and being like, oh, yeah, I recognize this. Oh, now I know more about that. Just kind of something cool maybe worth checking out if you're into a little bit of recent history. So just been DVRing those and probably play catch up this weekend.
There you go. All right, let's wrap this puppy up. We thank you for joining us this week. For those of you who are still with us at the end of the show, thank you for hanging along with us. Thank you each and every week for being with us. You can find us, usual spots, anywhere you listen to podcasts, Jedi and Germs, Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs. And, you know, you hit each one of us, any one of us up on Facebook or Twitter. We love the discussion and enjoy talking with you. Thank you all so much. We'll talk to you again very soon. John, take us out.
Hey, everybody.